Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Great American Senior Show. We're back on the road again in Brevard County, one of the best-known names in law enforcement in Florida, and soon to be all the nation, if not all the nation already. Sheriff Wayne Ivey is our guest once again. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, man. We had a great time before, and I was excited when our team told us we were going to do this. So,
you know, one of the things, as we covered a lot of material, was the overall Sheriff's Department. We didn't go into a lot of details about your department itself. A lot of employees, a lot of command structure. Tell us about it.
So, you know, the Brevard County Sheriff's Office is 1,700 members, and those members are civilian, sworn law enforcement officers, sworn corrections deputies, telecommunicators, IT people. As I always tell everyone, no matter what job you might want to do in the private sector, you can do here. We have veterinarians that work in our animal services. We have helicopter pilots. We have doctors that work at the jail, pharmacists. There's nothing. IT, everything. So it's kind of like an aircraft carrier, if you will, like it's a city all to itself. But it's made up of amazing people that do amazing things every day. And, you know, I always tell everybody, if I had to select what my greatest leadership quality is, it is staying out of the way of good people, putting them in the right places, giving them the mission, and then standing back and watching them fulfill it. So it's an amazing agency. One of the things that makes this agency so great is we're surrounded by an amazing community that love us, trust us, and protect us just as much as we love, trust, and protect them. $146 million budget. That takes a great CFO and a team to manage and do the things that we need to do to make sure that we're protecting not only the community by keeping evil away, but also protecting being a good shepherd of their taxes and of the taxpayers' dollars. And so we try to work it from both angles. I've learned that the best way to do a budget in this capacity, and probably a home budget as well, is to quickly identify your wants and your needs and then realize they're never the same. And the example I always give everybody is, I want a Rolex. I need a watch. And that's how we try to manage our budget here. We do it by identifying what it takes to protect our deputies, what it takes to protect our citizens, and then what can we do that makes the job a little more efficient, a little more safer. And we operate from that capacity. But there's this is such a great agency. And when you look at how it functions, I cringe sometimes because I hear law enforcement leaders say, well, our support staff in this. We don't have support staff here. Every member is vital to our success.
Community outreach is important for me, and I know it is important for you. How do you come up with all these great ideas that you have?
I guess the best way to say it is I have fun in everything I do. You will very rarely find me that I don't have a smile on my face and that I don't have a pep in my step because I love this job. I get up every day, and my wife says all she ever sees me in is my uniform. In fact, she's threatened to buy me pajamas that look like this, which is fine with me. I love this job. I get up every day and I can't wait to go do it. So I try to be innovative, and our team knows that, and they try to be just as innovative. But we try to come up with things that are engaging. You use the term community outreach. To truly have successful community outreach, you have to engage your community. You have to develop things that are going to keep them coming back. And, you know, the overwhelming majority come back because they love what we do. And there are those that come back because they don't like what we do. But either way, they're engaged, and we're able to get our messaging out. As I became sheriff, what I wanted to do, in fact, what I ran on, was that I was going to lower the crime rate. And I know we talked about in the previous show that we've lowered our crime rate by 51% here in Brevard County. But our goal was to get vital crime prevention information to our citizens before they became a victim, not after. And to do that, you have to engage your citizens. You have to reach them on how they'll let you reach them. Is it through a podcast like we're doing today? Is it through email, because not everybody has social media? Is it through Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is? How will they let us reach? Is it a smartphone app? So what we did was we set up all of those, and we increased our dynamic ability to get to our citizens. Once we got to them, then we can give them and say, we're having a rash of burglaries to unlock cars. Please lock your car doors. We mix humor into what we do. Now, when it's time to be serious, we're ultra serious. But when we can deliver a message through a little bit of humor, it engages the community. A little bit of craziness. I have a very weird sense of humor that I just love to laugh. And I think if I can make people laugh, then we can make people listen. And so that's what we try to do.
I'm going to go into some of those programs or ask you to go into them in a little detail in a moment. But a serious note about our communities, and it's an anniversary coming up for residents here in Brevard County, April 23rd, 1987. A gentleman who lived here, Kentucky transplant, angry at kids cutting through his yard and property next to his yard, grabbed a pistol and an automatic weapon, ended up in, I believe it was the Sable Palm Shopping Center, started shooting people in the parking lot. Two law enforcement officers showed up. One had 18 shots through the windshield. That officer was killed. Another officer was killed reloading his weapon. Terrible scene. The suspect then went into a Winn-Dixie, still shooting people. When it was all said and done, I believe we had 6 people killed, 12 wounded, the suspect captured alive. At that time, I think you were detective in a neighboring county, but you had to hear about this. What was going through your mind?
You know, the same thing, and I did. I remember it vividly as it happened. And you know, when you think back to that time frame, when you think back, there was no social media then. There was the news, and there was word of mouth. And when you hear about these things, the first thing you think of is, you know, the hurt, the compassion for those that were lost and those that were injured in it, those that suffered because they had lost someone. And then the next thing you think is, how does that happen? How does somebody do that? And you think about, you know, how do we prevent it? How do we keep it from happening in our own area? At that time, I was with the Putnam County Sheriff's Office. And at that time, you know, you would think about, are we going to have, you know, a similar incident? Well, now you fast forward to social media, to all the expediency of information sharing, and you think about school shootings, Parkland, Columbine, yeah. San Bernardino, California, yeah. The Pulse nightclub. You know, you can just go on and on. And I can remember when Columbine happened. I remember vividly when Parkland. You never forget those moments. You never forget where you were. Right. And so as I you know, reflect back now, being here in Brevard County, being in the role I am, and I reflect back on what I knew then about that incident in Palm Bay. And what I know now, is that the community wasn't prepared for it. The community wasn't aware that something like that could happen. And even today, when I go out and I speak about active shooters, I ask people, how many of you lived here in that time frame? And it's amazing the number of people yep. that I'll be at a presentation I'm doing that'll raise their hand. And then I ask them this, how many of you lived here in 2015? When we had an active shooter at the Melbourne Mall? How many of you lived here in 2000, I think it was 17, when we had an active shooter at Parish Hospital that took the life of a patient and an employee? And then I followed up with this. Well, if you lived here then, or if you didn't live here then, but you know now that we had those, you have to anticipate we could have one tomorrow. We pray we never do, but you got to be prepared to be the first line of defense for you, your family, those around you in the movie theater, those around you in church. And the best way to be prepared for that is what we know all too well. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Law enforcement's coming. We're mocked to with our hair on fire. But until we get there, you're going to have to be able to deal with that threat.
And that's the reason that I brought that up. Of course, that suspect was convicted. I believe he got 2 life sentences plus. Died on death row 2009. Yeah. Okay. Yes, it was 2009. Yeah. And I'm not going to mention his name because he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
I think the message there, and you hit it right on the head, that those of us in the community, including senior citizens, have to be prepared to protect themselves.
That's right. And, you know, you're the first line of defense. And as we see active shootings unfold across the world and across the country, there are those out there that want to blame the gun. Here's the reality of it. I can take my gun off my gun belt right now and lay it on this desk, and it won't kill a single soul. I can put it in my hands, and it won't kill a single soul. But you put it in evil hands, and evil kills. That's what kills. Evil will kill with a knife. It'll kill with a bottle. It'll kill with a limb off a tree. And so it's evil that kills, and evil's out there. The world has evil in it. And so since we don't know, you know, when that evil is going to strike, and in the Art of War, Sun Tzu says that if you know your enemy and know yourself, you won't be killed in 100 battles. But if you don't know your enemy and don't know yourself, you'll be killed in every single conflict. So it's important for us to know us. I don't know who's the person that's going to try and rob me. I don't know who the person is. It's going to be an active shooter in the movie theater or the church that I'm in. But I do know me. And I know that if I'm prepared to respond, not react, because there's a big difference between responding and reacting. If I'm prepared to respond to a threat, then I'm going to survive that threat. I mean, at least if nothing else, I'm going to have a much better chance of surviving that threat than I am if I'm not prepared at all.
Glad to hear that we have similar reading habits, by the way. You know, I want to switch back to something a bit more pleasant. I think our senior citizens do have a realization of they need to be prepared. When I walked in this office, I was not exactly prepared to see Junie. Junie, tell us who Junie is. Is it Major Junie?
Major Junie. Junie is the only, to my knowledge, he's the only command team canine in the entire country. We recently promoted him to Major. And actually, if you look at our website at BrevardSheriff.com, you'll see my photo, and then you'll see Junie. And the chief deputy doesn't like that. He believes his picture should be right there next to mine. But Junie, anybody in our agency, and probably most people in our community, can tell you that Junie is the most important thing in the Brevard County Sheriff's Office. In fact, a little bit of humor here. We actually, when people come in for their oral board, when they're applying with us, we ask them two questions at the very end of it. And those questions are, if Junie and the chief deputy are standing in the middle of the road, and a car is going to run over one of them, who do you save? If they say the chief deputy, they're not getting hired here because they don't understand the dynamics. If they say Junie, then the next question is, now Junie and the sheriff are standing in the middle of the road, who do you save? If they say the sheriff, they're not getting hired because I should have enough sense not to stand in the middle of the road. They should save that dog. So he's an intricate part of our agency. He's our mascot. And as you look over at him, he's sound asleep under the United States flag, which I think is just awesome for him. But he's named after a little boy by the name of Junie Rios Martinez. And Junie Rios Martinez in 1991 was abducted and murdered here in Brevard County. As we said earlier in the show, I wasn't here then, but I quickly learned the significance of Junie's abduction and murder here. And so when we got my Junie, when he was donated to the agency by the Jimmy Rice Foundation, he was 10 weeks old, and we took a picture of him, we put up on our Facebook page, and we asked our citizens to help us name him. It was a cute little picture, and well, it wasn't little, because Junie's never been little, but it was a puppy picture. We got over 5,000 names, and the young lady that was running the contest and running our social media then walked into my office, and she said, Sheriff, we got over 5,000 names. You're going to pick the third name on the list. And I said, well, I'll decide what name I'm going to pick. She goes, no, sir. She goes, I wasn't saying I'm telling you to pick it. I'm telling you, I know that's what you're going to pick. And I said, well, what is the third name? And she said, it's Junie, after Junie Rios Martinez. I have no idea to this day what those other names were. Never looked at the list. Didn't need to. We do swear-in ceremonies for our canines. It's a neat way to introduce them to our community. And in that particular one, we had Junie's mom and dad come in and pin his badge on him.
Wow.
And he has been, today he's 7 weeks old, or 7 years old, I'm sorry. He's been to every memorial for Junie Rios Martinez. He's been to Junie's mom's high school reunion to stand there. He's iconic to our community. I tell everyone I'm his Uber driver. And I get him to the events he needs to go to. But he's so much more. He's trained to search for missing children. He's trained to be a child comfort dog. And there's God's hand was at work here. And I will demonstrate that by saying, when Junie started living with my wife and I, now, when we first got him, he lived with our Paws and Stripes team and our canines at the corrections facility. But about 3 years ago, Junie, for as long as we've had him, if he saw me anywhere, he would start whining. If he heard my voice, he would start howling. I'd have to go get him. And so one day I said, clean Junie up. I'm going to take him to a budget meeting. And they said, Sheriff, what are you thinking? And I said, nobody would be able to tell me no with Junie. And so people knew him from the parades and stuff. And so I took him to the budget meeting. I took him back afterwards. The next day I went and got him again, took him to a couple events. Next day, same thing. After about a week of that, I couldn't take him back anymore. It just broke my heart to put him back in the kennel. So I told my wife, Junie's moving in with us. He has an air-conditioned kennel in the garage that has a sofa in it, has pictures of me and him all over. But here's where God had a hand in this. God had a hand in naming him Junie so that the legacy of Junie Rios Martinez forever lives on in our community. To show you how deep that runs, when Junie first started living with us, my wife said, what's Junie's birthday? Because we're that weird family that celebrates their dog's birthdays. And I said, I don't know. I said, I know the day we got him, though. I said, I've got a picture of that. So I pulled out my phone. I pulled up the picture of Junie the day we got him. It was May 6th of 2014. And so I said, he's 10 weeks old. So my wife's busy counting back 10 weeks to see what his actual birthday was. And I decided to see when Junie Rios Martinez was born. He was born on May 6th. And so to know that Junie was received by our agency on the same exact day, the anniversary of Junie Rios's birthday, even though he wouldn't be named until 2 weeks later, is just to me showing God's hand at work. He's a great dog. I mean, he has his own activity book that teaches children how to be safe. He's got his own T-shirts. There are Junie socks. There are Junie hats. Hannah, who's sitting here with us, that's my handler today. When she first came to work for us, or in the capacity she's in, I told her, if we're ever in an event and something bad happens, don't worry about me. You get my dog and you get him out of here, because he's iconic to this community and people love him.
Another iconic thing of this community, some of the programs that earlier you were talking about, your sense of humor and the impact that those programs and the humor and the messaging can have on the community. I'm going to say the name, you give me the description.
All right.
Wheel of Fugitives.
Wheel of Fugitive. It was really our first program initiative that we put up. It was it's 10 fugitives on a wheel that looks just like the Wheel of Fortune. And I spin it every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Whoever it lands on, they're our fugitive of the week. And so we started it. Our chief deputy at the time, Doug Waller, told me it was going to be a horrible idea. People wouldn't like it. People love it. In addition to people enjoying it, it's got an 88% success rate that within the first 3 to 5 days, 88% of the people on the wheel turn themselves in or are captured. And so it's iconic to our agency. It's now a program that's across the country. Law enforcement agencies across the country use it or something similar to it. For example, Flagler County has Fugitive Bingo. There's a agency in Texas that has Fugitive Feud. It just goes on and on. So it's been a lot of fun. We go into the studio and film it and put it up. The ironic part is the fugitives actually watch it now. And so they can see if they're on there. Many of them go turn themselves in. Others of them decide they're not going to turn themselves in. But our citizens tell us where we can find them at.
Amazingly successful. That's a great idea. Fishing for Fugitives.
Yeah, Fishing for Fugitives is another similar program. It gives me an opportunity to highlight the beautiful waterways of Brevard County. We go around to different areas. I have a fishing pole that's got handcuffs on it. I cast out. I just kind of ramble while we're doing it, talking about the beautiful area, where they can find this spot at. The chamber loves it because it shows all the great fishing spots. And then I catch and land a fugitive. We pull it in, and it's the catch of the day. Tell people where they can be found at or what area they last frequented, the waters of Titusville or Cocoa or wherever. Tell them their charges, and we ask our citizens to help us find them.
And folks, I'm not going to give away that secret lure, but it is in the shape of handcuffs. Seriously, it seriously is.
Yeah. Now, the funny part is when we first, when you see Fishing for Fugitives, Junie's in the beginning of it because he's always with me. And the very first time we filmed it, we didn't have handcuffs on the end. We had we wanted me to be able to cast out, and so it had a water bottle on the end of it. Well, without thinking, when I casted it out, we were actually out at the Indian River. When I casted it out, I forgot that Junie loves water bottles. And as soon as it hit in the water, Junie took off and almost drugged me into the river. And so we had to digress and come up with a different plan. So it's but it's a lot of fun. We mix humor when it's appropriate. When it's time to be serious, we try to engage our community.
One that really, I think, is on the tremendously positive side, the good stuff.
The good stuff. You know, the news, and I know you're a longtime journalist, and you'll probably echo about what I'm about to say, but for the most part, the news doesn't report good, upbeat stuff. When you turn on the news, you walk away depressed because you're hearing about war or famine or COVID or economy, all of those things. And so the good stuff was designed to tell all the great stuff that our agency, our deputies, our community does. And so it's just that. It's the good stuff. I actually got the idea for it from listening to a song one day in my car by Kenny Chesney called The Good Stuff.
The Good Stuff.
And it really just resonated with me that there's so much our team does out here, so much our community does. We put up what they do, and you're right. It is tremendously popular. People love it. It gives me a chance to showcase the amazing, heroic efforts of some of our deputies, the amazing things we do here in this agency, and really, quite frankly, how Brevard County serves as a model for other communities to follow.
One of those models, and I know it from firsthand experience because I've been sort of a Santa's helper in the past, Triad.
Mm-hmm.
What is Triad?
Triad is really a lifeline, if you will, or a conduit, if you will, for our seniors. We're very blessed. We have a great Triad board, a great Triad community. But we also have a guy by the name of Joe Downs that is just absolutely has made Triad helping protect seniors his life. He puts in thousands and thousands of hours. I just lost on Joe Downs. And I say that because Joe Downs was a volunteer reserve deputy, and he volunteered through Triad. And he put in thousands of hours. Well, for some reason that I can't explain, I decided to hire him. And now I pay him to do this when he was doing it for free before. So, you know, maybe I'm not the best at budgeting. All right, let's just say that. So I told Joe, I'm like, Joe, I'm losing money on you. You were doing this for free, but yep. I couldn't look myself in the mirror if I didn't bring him on board because he's passionate about it. He loves it. But Triad is about providing resources for our seniors. It's about Project Lifesaver that is for people with Alzheimer's and dementia and making sure that if they get lost, we can find them. It's about helping the person that needs a handicap ramp built at their house and they don't have the money to do it. It's about somebody that's impacted by a storm, one of our seniors that's impacted by a storm and lose their roof, and finding a roofing company and the funds, the resources to go do it. It's all inclusive. It's Triad is about protecting our seniors.
I just want to say, Lieutenant, I'll put in another good word for a raise. He does a great job.
He does a great job.
You anticipated my next question. And before that question, same as with the last episode, can you come back in the future?
Absolutely, man. I love giving out information about our community and all the great things we do. And when I say we, I don't mean the Brevard County Sheriff's Office. I mean we, the community of Brevard County.
Alzheimer's. I'm familiar with the Brevard Alzheimer's Foundation, and Tim Timmerman takes great pride in pointing to Brevard County as an Alzheimer-friendly community. And you just touched upon that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you look at Alzheimer's, the Alzheimer's doesn't just victimize the person with this dreaded disease. It's the caregivers, the providers, the people that are living that just equally to the person with the disease. And so we've always, as an agency, as a community, embraced Alzheimer's and trying to find a cure. And I believe with the effort that's put forward, one day there will be a cure. One day we won't have to have the Joe's Clubs, and we won't have to have the Alzheimer's Foundation. We will find a cure for that. I believe it's reachable. I believe it's attainable. So, you know, every year I emcee the Alzheimer's Walk the walk to end Alzheimer's. We try and help raise money. We embed and engage ourselves in every way we can, because Alzheimer's will pick anybody for its victim. And I have a personal relationship with having lost my grandmother on my father's side to Alzheimer's. And, you know, we go back to that finding humor in everything. The humorous way that we found out my grandmother had Alzheimer's, because back then it wasn't as prevalent. It wasn't as commonly diagnosed. It wasn't as well known. We noticed that my grandfather was gaining weight. And we lived next door to him at the time. I was still a kid. We noticed that Grandpa was gaining weight. And so my father asked him, said, "Dad, what's going on? Are you not working out as much? Are you not out in the garden as much?" And he said, "No." He says, "Your mom's gotten forgetful. And sometimes she cooks 3 and 4 breakfasts and 3 or 4 lunches. And I don't want to hurt her feelings, so I'm eating them all." And so, you know, it was the start of what we you know, found out later. But when you look at how much it impacts everybody across the board, I know a family here in Brevard that at the same exact time, the mother and mother-in-law got Alzheimer's. The family had to retire to be able to take care of them. The family, sometimes the caregivers are the ones that are impacted the most by this. And so it's a huge part of every community that needs to be embraced. It's a huge part of every community that needs to be extended a hand of help.
Indeed. And I want to thank you for agreeing to come back in the future. We've covered a lot of territory, but I know there are still areas that we can talk about. And I will be coming back and we'll be talking about more things. Sheriff Ivey, thank you for having us in your office today.
It was my honor. Thank you, guys.
Until our next episode, I really appreciate being here, and rest assured we will be back. We will give you a little bit of a tease in advance before we do get back, so you'll be able to tune us in on the Great American Senior Show. Until that time, I am your gray-haired host of the Great American Senior Show, and that's how our program ends.